Dang it. What was I saying? The human dongle.
Oh, get your finger out of my eye.
Way better now that you've stopped touching it.
Yes, I was...
Oklahoma, where the wind comes sweeping down the plain, and the waving wheat can sure smell sweet when the wind comes right behind the rain.
You ready?
Yeah. Take three.
Welcome back to Okla Said. It is the official Okla Ed podcast. I am so happy. We are talking gamification this week with Okla Ed's number one gamifier, Scott Hazelwood. He's also my number one favorite co-host of the Okla Said podcast.
You're my number one favorite co-host too.
Thanks.
And there's that's only like a, two of us.
So yeah, the list makes it easy. Is not impressive. So gamification and education, this is something like I really want to get into, but I am not a gamer. So I am stuck. And the information you gave us in the interview was awesome and gave me a few places to start. So let's dive into the actual chat you did.
Let's do it. And I tried to model the chat like a game. So I included a few things that I don't know that people all caught. And that's okay. That's
well, tell us about those things.
So I know what
an Easter egg is.
Okay. So that was one of the things that I included that I thought would kind of be fun. And so for people that don't play video games, that maybe aren't sure what an Easter egg is. And an Easter egg is what it sounds like, a cool, shiny thing that just has to be found. It's just like hiding Easter eggs on Easter Day when you decorate them all up and they're all pretty. It's the same thing in the game. And a lot of times, like if you go through your DVD collection right now, Aaron, and you pick out your favorite DVD.
Okay.
So let's say it's Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban.
Love that one.
Okay. So put in Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban DVD Easter eggs, and there's going to be something in there. So it's a little hidden thing. And games have those little hidden things, and they're called Easter eggs. So I put in three different Easter eggs in this chat, and they were all links to different YouTube videos. And I'm not going to tell you what they are. You're going to have to look through show notes. I'm going to make it hard on you. You're going to have to take an extra step. But there are things you'll enjoy once you find them.
Okay. Well, I'm excited. Are you talking about... I think I have found them in the show notes and am partaking in these Easter eggs now.
You'll be distracted from the podcast.
Well, not like right now, but they're... They're open tabs on my computer.
Okay. I also slid in some secret questions.
Oh, my goodness. You are so awesome.
Because sometimes games are fun because you can find a secret. And it was really hard. They were so secret that compliments to Josh Flores. He was like, already found them.
But, the guy is like a mad gamer, and his keynote speech at iPad Palooza OU last year
was really good.
Was in full on game mode.
Yeah, it was.
Like, doo 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 doo. Pause music. Yeah. Like, you and I were sitting behind the curtain, like, whoa!
Yeah, that was so cool. It was really good. But in fact, my secret questions were so secret, nobody really answered them. So we'll talk about them at the end of the chat today. But nobody. So we will reveal those, but when? At the end. So the end. If you want to hear the secrets.
When the credits roll.
You'll have to wait. So anyway, there you
go. Well, question one, what is your favorite game and why? What's your favorite game?
Oh gosh, there's so many of
them. What is your one favorite game, Scott?
Breathing into the paper bag.
And why?
I think my favorite game is Tomb Raider. Because it's a game that's kind of combines some of the Indiana Jones.
Love Indiana Jones.
Sort of, and it's a video game, but it combines that Indiana Jones looking for archaeology and solving puzzles with limited. The thing that I like about Tomb Raider is it's not necessarily walk into a room, kill all the bad guys, go to the next room, kill all the bad guys. Yes, there's some battle that takes place, but a lot of it is exploration, solving a puzzle, finding an artifact, and it hooks me every time.
So what is your favorite platform to play Tomb Raider? I know a lot of people are like, I'm a computer person, I'm an Xbox person, I'm a PlayStation. What is your favorite platform?
We have a PlayStation 4, and that's what Tomb Raider is, the latest release of Tomb Raider is on. But I've played every version of Tomb Raider from the first PlayStation all the way through the current.
Excellent.
Yeah. What's your favorite game?
I really like Galaga or Galaxia, depending on the platform, you know, where you're shooting the little aliens that dive bomb you.
Like the souped up Space Invaders, basically.
Yes. I haven't really played many games. I was a Call of Duty, like Modern Warfare 2 person several years ago, like several years ago, like a lot of years ago now. And I liked the World at War Call of Duty as well, because it was like World War II era, but I haven't really played games since then. And I definitely, was only the, you know, what do they call it when everybody's in the room at the same time? I didn't play the storyline.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I didn't play the story. It's called a story, right?
Yes.
Okay, see, I'm working on it. But I have, because my kids are into video games. They have, like, the Lego Harry Potter, Lego...
Oh, yeah, those are good ones.
Lord of the Rings, and Pirates of the Caribbean. They love the one with John Marston. What is that one? The cowboy guy. Red Dead.
Red Dead.
But they're not allowed to play the story. They're only allowed to be in the open world and shoot deer and stuff like that. No judging, right?
Hey, man, we shoot zombies at the Hazelwood House, and we have shot zombies with Extra Juicy since the youngest was 7.
Well, and so shooting is cool, but like, you're allowed to go bang a whore? Is that
I'm gonna have to bleep that.
Do you? It's in the game, like in the storyline, and so I don't want them.
Right. There's a couple of games
doing those things.
There's a couple of games where I've told the boy, like, you can't, like, this game you cannot play.
And I'll never be a Grand Theft Auto person because you get points for doing really rotten things. And
you know what? I love Grand Theft Auto.
Do you?
Yes, don't judge. It's so bad. Like, I'm playing it, I'm like, I love this so much. It's so wrong. Yes. I mean, it's just...
Like, go jack that person's car. If you hit them twice, you get more points. And then let's go drink some booze and
it's
jump out of airplanes.
I know, it's so terrible. It's so enjoyable. But no, but in fact, just the other day, we bought a zombie pack.
For
PlayStation 4 for Call of Duty.
Okay.
And the kids have been playing it nonstop. And so it's two girls and a boy, and they'll play all afternoon and shoot zombies together.
See, and I think that's okay.
Yeah.
That's okay.
Yeah.
But it does make me want to, like, get Skyrim out and check on it. However, then I remember...
That is my second favorite game.
Well, and then I remember that conversation with Flores, where he was like, you know what? I have to live my life. And I don't want side quests that call for me to go weld something and then iron the laundry and then do the dishes before I come back and play.
I'm just a little bit exaggerating. To interrupt.
Okay.
Games are great because there's choice. So if you don't want to iron the laundry, you don't do that side quest.
Okay. So, but I know my daughter loves Skyrim as well, and so I do want to get into these things. And as a matter of fact, I downloaded Limbo.
Oh, I haven't heard.
While we were, it's the, like, this little boy. It's in black and white. I remember seeing it at South By as, like, a real problem-solving game, because there are no directions. There are now tutorials on how to get through things, but, like, at the time, there weren't. And so I was like, I'm going to play a game, and I'm going to play that black and white one with the little boy. It's called Limbo. Anyway, I want to play games. I want to incorporate games, because games are fun. I really do enjoy them, and I think if we can bring them into education as well, we can explore things. Wow, we haven't even said who our people are on question one yet.
So, go.
Okay. Like we are side questing the mess out of this conversation. Okay. Deborah Thorenson was my tweet on this one. Anything except for tic-tac-toe right now, because my daughter will make a cat win every time. But I also like board games because they make you think. Tic-tac-toe. Geez Louise. It can be over quick, but like, yeah, the strategy part of it, if the kids get it, it's, you know.
Maybe if you did it game show style where there was a question. You have to get the question right to place the...
You're such a good gamifier.
Yeah. I went with Linda Hassler Reed, and she said, past guilty pleasure until my obsession caused me to delete it. Pokemon. who looks for and finds Pokemon in the Grand Canyon? I'm assuming Linda did.
I'm thinking Linda might have.
In fact, with Pokemon Go, you can now trade your catches or whatever. I haven't played Pokemon Go for that reason, because I have heard it gets into the blood. So
okay, well, there you go.
Yeah.
Question two,
why do you play the games that you play? Now this is important when you think about school just in general, because sometimes just in general we're dealing with people who are told they have to be there.
Okay,
like if you're between 5 and 18, you don't have a choice. State law says go to school unless you've graduated.
You go to school. Right? Yeah.
So what we as teachers have to do is we have to look at why we play these games. Like, we are voluntarily choosing to play Pokemon in the Grand Canyon. Right?
Okay.
So
yes.
How can we... Why? Like, why are we doing that? Why do we, you know, why do you choose to play these games? Because if we can figure out why we're playing those games... We can take some of those things that are causing us to play these games voluntarily and put them into our classrooms, and maybe our classrooms can become places where our students want to come every day because they know something exciting is going to happen.
Okay.
Because that's part of the thing with Pokemon. Like, you're excited because you're catching the critter.
Like, yeah.
That dumps dopamine into your system. It's like a natural high. It lifts your mood. It makes you smile. It's hard to be negative, you know, all that kind of stuff. So why do you play the games that you play?
All right. Well, Shane Sanders says to make connections with students that he serves, also to keep himself balanced so that he can be mentally strong throughout the school year. Mm-hmm. Hashtag brain break, hashtag relationship building, obviously hashtag Oakland Ed. So I like that. But now I wish I would have picked his tweet for number one to find out what games he likes to play anyway. but I like his reasons. How's that?
I mean, sometimes games are excellent brain breaks, and we need those. Those are important. So I went with Deborah Thornton here, at DJ Thornton. She said, last week I played a new board game with my aunt and uncle. It was just fun to figure out new rules, see who could be both competitive and nice, and try to win. I also went with our dear Virginian, John Bennett, who is at JCBJR. He said, because I can avoid the hectic world for a bit and can optimize problem solving. And he had said in his one of his favorite things to do is work on Sudoku. How do you say
it? Yeah,
I
don't know.
But anyway, it's the numbers one. And, yeah. But yeah, a lot of people do that. And Jane McGonigal talks about in her book, people play games to get away from reality.
So yeah.
There's an intention behind that.
I hate patterns. I hate trying to find patterns. Like, I really do. Sudoku, I've tried. I want to like the game because, like, I feel like it'll make me smarter.
Yeah.
But I hate patterns.
Everybody's doing it. I need to do it too.
I tried to like wine, like, because everybody drinks wine, according to Twitter and Facebook. But I just don't like it.
You know, we all have the things that we like and don't.
I just like, I don't know, life. Anyway, that's horrible. No, delete that. That sounded horrible. It sounds like if you like wine, you don't like life. I'm not saying that. Okay, question three. What is your definition of gamification?
Now, I threw this out there to give us a baseline of what we're looking for here. So that's why this question is important. And I didn't want to preload it with my thoughts.
Did anything surprise you?
No.
Okay. Well, I went with Dr. Laura Searcy on this one. And she says, using gaming techniques for education and entertainment. This is a new topic for me. So excited to learn. And she put, like, Josh Flores, add your teacher character skills graphic to level up my answer, please. goal, find a PD partner who will level you up and give you XP. And so she's hung out with him a lot to be able to add some of that in there, especially if she's new to this, because that was like a super geeky answer right there. But I really liked this because her definition was right on, but then I liked her find somebody who will help level you up. That was cool.
Yeah. I liked what she had to say there too. And she had a really cute bitmoji that went with it.
Yes.
So Lauren Pena, who's at Lauren_Pena16 and who will be teaching in a different building this year. I don't know if you saw that, but she's moving from Mustang to Cassidy. So good for her. She said she'll be over there with those Friar people who are so brilliant. So that'll be
exciting. I know.
That
will be exciting.
She said taking the principles of gaming, an objective, specific rules, reward systems, and rapid feedback cycles. Thank you, Buckley and Doyle 2014 and Hazelwood, to engage students and increase student learning. She threw me in there exciting. Because she's working on something and she's like, I know you've done a lot of gamification stuff. Can you help me out? Can you get me started? So I've got all this folder of research articles based on gamification. So I just shared it with her. So there you go. That's how she got into that one.
I like that. But, hey, will you share that with me?
Sure.
I want to work on something.
Okay.
Okay.
I'll send it your way. But the nuts and bolts are gamification is basically a combination of what's going on between what Laura said and what Lauren said. And that is you're using elements of games or mechanics of games or things that make games games, and you're using them not for a specific game. So think about your reward miles on your credit card.
Yes.
That's
game. Using them this summer.
Yeah, yeah. So that's a game. You get points for doing something. That's usually what you do in a game. But when you buy gas or groceries and you swipe your card to get the points, you're not playing a game when you do that. But it's a gaming technique.
So, I like that. Yeah.
So that's what gamification is. It's just taking these gaming techniques, mechanics, elements, and using them in non-game situations.
Okay.
Question 4. What part of your favorite game can you take to your classroom?
And so I said in the interview part, but I'll say it here too, just in case, you know, somebody skips or whatever. I really like the idea of, like, in that game, Galaga, Galaxia, whatever, getting the extra airplane. Or like in Pac-Man, sometimes you get an extra little Pac-Man guy, right?
Right.
And so I like the idea of getting a new life. And you talked about translating that into a redo and or on a test or, you know, something like that. And I really like that idea. Although I already allow a bunch of redos because I want kids to get it all the way. So I got to figure out a different way to bring that in. But I like that piece, being able to add another life to something.
Right. So who'd you pick for the tweet?
I picked Todd Gregg. He says, I think Scrabble is a little bit harder, but I have used some elements of Clue, because he had used Scrabble as his favorite game. But I have used elements of Clue in a week-long Cold War era spy game activity. I've done this with U.S. history and world history classes. Students have to study documents, find them in the school by cracking codes. And that's fun. That's super
pretty
fun.
Cool. That's pretty cool.
And I
cool.
love history, so I like the idea of thinking in that way.
One thing that you could do with that too is if your kids have access to some sort of connected device or Google Earth.
Okay.
You could put coordinates together in codes. And so
geography,
when,
yes.
So when the kids find that specific coordinate, inside that coordinate is the clue to the next coordinate or piece of learning that you need them to have that took place in that location. Because you can make the Google the Google work for you. So My Accidental Life, who is at Joan Haggy, she said, good question. Munchkin, you collect things you need to get stronger and move up levels. I like the level idea. Complete grammar goals, level up. Complete parts of story goals, level up.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I don't know this game, Munchkin. Have you heard of that one?
I've actually held the game in my hands, but haven't pulled the trigger on it yet. So
okay. Yeah. Okay. Good to know.
Yeah.
Well, question 5. A key component of games is choice. How can you provide choice in your classroom? That was a great question. And there were several good tweets here. I did pick Josh Flores on this one. He said, multiple pathways to the end, boss. Yeah. But grading required... I'm going to stop you right there. Figure it out. Like, he's having a conversation with some upper level somebody that, anyway. So I really like that. But I like the idea of the multiple pathways. There are, I'm thinking in terms of mathematics here, and tell me if I'm wrong here. I know mathematics can a lot of times be very linear, but if you work on, like, so I've got this benchmarking tool that tells me weak points, strong points,
right.
And you can let a kiddo either really quickly work through numbers and operations, but then take their time leveling up in the geometry and measurement portions.
Yeah.
But they can choose in which order to work on some of those, because not all geometry and measurement has to have numbers and operations. Am I right?
Yeah. And what I did with my high school calculus kids was I said, here's their traditional homework assignment from the textbook. You can do this. Or you can do three of the questions from the homework that I've assigned, and you can create a video to share with others, like with the intention that when another student watches this video, they know how to do this calculus problem. So you have to get it right, period.
Or, that's really cool.
Or you could teach this lesson to the class, this question to the class. So.
And do each of those different items earn you different points?
Yes.
Okay.
So with the traditional one earning you the least.
Right.
Because if you're going to work for an authentic audience, you tend to be a bit more on your A game.
And I like that idea.
And my kids, anecdotally, didn't, when they shared it, they shared problems that weren't easy, but weren't necessarily the hardest ones either. Like, they picked pretty good problems to demonstrate. So that's another way that you can provide choice. And along with the grading thing, I was grading all the time, but I was hardly ever, the way that my class ended up rolling, I was hardly ever grading 120 things at one time. I was usually grading like 10 things at once at the most.
Okay.
So, I don't know. There's ways to get
okay.
So I went with Stephanie Peppers for my tweet. She is at Nerdy Firsties. She said, I think using technology in different games or programs that do the same thing but in different ways can help kids find something that's suited best for them. Provide choice whenever you can in where they can do their work, how they can, and when they can do it. Sometimes choice is just not very possible. I mean, we have to do this thing, and really, we have to do it this way. It's the best way to handle it with 30 kids. But sometimes right. choice is possible. And when you have choice, when you can, offer things that you are comfortable with your students doing.
All right.
So question six. So this is side quests can advance the main storyline. How can you create side quests in your classroom? And maybe I did not... So this question was hard because I didn't provide any context for what a side quest is. And so that then became a discussion point. But a side quest means, and we talked about it in the interview, allowing an alternate way to get to the end goal. So, you know, to pick up, if you didn't listen to the interview, we talked about volcanoes. So maybe as a teacher, I've got a volcano unit together. I've got my five lessons that talk about volcanoes, and this is my planned path. But if a student comes to me and says, hey, I want to talk about the Kilauea volcano, and I want to learn more about what's going on, because that's, you know, that's an event that's occurring right now in Hawaii. So I tell my student, yes, find out everything you can find out about that volcano and report back to class on what you find. Well, in the process of that, my student has to learn something about volcanoes because that's what she's looking at. So even though it's not what I had planned, it's an alternative that she can take that still is moving her towards understanding what a volcano is. So that's a side quest.
I like what you're saying there. I initially thought like Dr. Laura thought, and squirrel. It's like, what side quest? I'm off topic. But I totally get it now, and can dig it now that you've got context around that. So.
Yeah, and Kimberly Blodgett, she was like, Hazelwood, I don't know what you're talking about. I had to look it up.
Yeah, I saw that too.
So there you go. There's your context. Todd Gregg, who is at Mr. Gregg, he said, I think one way to do this at the secondary level is to incorporate my Genius Hour 20% time type options. Then let the choice be the side quest.
I like that, but yeah. I've heard 20% time should be something that they are totally into.
Right.
And so
same with Genius Hour. But
yeah.
But if you have I mean, maybe there's a way to tweak that a little bit where with their genius hour or 20% time, you're like, all right, you pick it, but here's the end goal.
Okay. I like, and then, or, extra points or XP points if you can tie it to.
Right. Yeah.
You know,
yeah. And offer a nugget there. So that way the students still have a lot of choice in how that time is spent.
Okay. Well, question seven, gamers will do extra work for perks and upgrades. What perks or upgrades can you offer your students? Great question. Ironing the laundry might be something that you have to do in order to get a shield, right?
I mean, it's possible.
So
it's like, so I'll take this to Josh Flores level here. And he loves Zelda. But I think in this, in Zelda 2 or Zelda 3, they introduced a leveling system. Okay. And I remember walking through the darn desert with Link, killing things so I could level up enough to go beat a boss. So I was just sitting there doing this extra work that didn't really advance the storyline at all, but I was working on it. I was practicing my little fighting moves and jumping on bad guys with sword down so I could get... So I was working on all of that in order to build up enough power to beat a stronger game character.
Okay.
So,
all right.
So there you go.
Well, I liked what Mrs. S at Kindergarten Rocks says. She says, the simplest things motivate kinders.
Yeah.
A fruit snack, pretzels, cheese puffs, being first in line, bragging rights for beating the teacher, getting to pick the brain break. Does that change as they get older? I'm going to say... sometimes,
mm-hmm.
but sometimes not. Offering right. fruit snacks to middle schoolers will sometimes do the trick. You know, I don't know.
Do.
Oh, goodness. Drink.
Yeah, I don't remember my high school kids necessarily asking for snack pretzels, cheesy poofs.
Sure.
But there are bragging rights. There is the whole beating the teacher, being able to choose the brain break if we do one. Those don't change.
Right.
Trey Kirkpatrick said, free time, extra hall passes, no homework, free help on test questions, etc. The possibilities seem endless. Students love perks in the classroom, no matter how big or small. And that's the trick there. So both of these teachers are in different ends of the spectrum, and they both have ideas that can work. So this is where you know your students or know your student body or your school community, and you can offer those things that match.
Okay.
But you have to be comfortable with it, because when they turn them in, you got to honor it. So if you say... Yes. If you say, get out of test free, and they bring it in, and this is like, but dang it, this is the one test where... So, like for me, I even had a couple of perks going, and the kids wanted to use it on the semester final. And they asked, can we use it on a semester final? I said, is a semester final a test? Because that was what the perk was designed for.
Right.
And it was. So I had to, even though inside my teacher thing, I was like, dang it, I forgot. But it was a test, so I let them use it.
Good for you.
Yeah, there you go. So, badges can be used to recognize students for doing what they're supposed to do. What badges could you use this year? Now, think to Angry Birds.
Okay.
You got Angry Birds?
I know the premise.
Slingshot, pull back slingshot, shoot the bird, knock over the pig, break the wood, smash the ice, break the stone, you know, whatever.
Sure, sure.
So... the object of that game is to pop pigs.
Okay.
You get a badge after you pop 1,000 pigs.
Oh.
That's what you're supposed to do.
All right.
You also get a badge for breaking 5,000 pieces of wood. Well, you're doing that too. So
okay.
That's what a badge is. It's like you're supposed to do these things. So after you do X number of these things, here's a badge.
My first experience with badges came from Khan Academy.
Yeah.
Do you know Khan Academy very well?
Yeah.
Okay, so they've got meteorite badges, they've got moon badges, earth badges, sun badges, black hole badges, and challenge patches. So badges, patches, da-da-da-da-da. And there are some that are like super easy to get, like these little meteorite badges, but there are some that are pretty darn hard to get, like the sun badges. And so far, the black hole badges haven't even, there's no way to earn those right now.
They're just dangling out there?
Yeah, I don't know. You know what the thing is there, but like the sun badges are you know, points and badges you get for doing things. And like one of them was answering five questions that got a thumbs up. Mm-hmm. So like you in Khan Academy can answer people's questions. And if people like that answer enough, then you'll get a badge. And mastering 200 unique skills gets you a badge. You know, little things that, but I really liked that badge thing. And I try to, you know, push my kids. Let's see how many badges we can earn. So I really like the badge idea. There is a whole Twitter chat dedicated to badging.
Yep.
People are trying to move professional development toward badging. And I really like this idea because, you know, we can go to, I mean, you and I, we like doing ed camps. We like doing ISTEs. We like doing PDs that are not necessarily tied to our school and their PD sessions. Like right. We kind of geek out in this world. And so earning badges towards that, like that, that was super cool. That was one of the things we had talked about at like Ed Camp online several years ago was mm-hmm. earning an Ed Camp. Like how many states have you done Ed Camps in? How many have you helped organize? How many have you? And so, you know, just fun ways to badge things like that. I geek out there. So yeah. I like badges.
And if we can do them digital, so instead of getting a certificate, but you have a digital badge that represents that you went to this place.
Yeah.
That you can share through social media or whatever. It's kind of fun to show them off. The one thing you want to be careful of is you don't want to badge every single thing because then it becomes a right. nightmare and then it's not a big deal anymore. But I had a guy that I worked with. He had what was called a Killjoy, and it was the smiley face, you know, the old smiley face?
Yeah.
That had a bullet hole right in the middle of its forehead and some blood spatter behind it. And so, again, high school kids. But, right. But it was called a Killjoy, and you got the Killjoy in his classroom. If you were able to get an A on five quizzes in a row, and then after that, if you missed and got a B on a quiz, you got a Killjoy. So you got a five, you got a basically a streak of five. And then when you, and then so it was a streaks of 5, 10, and 15. Because in this physics class, they did these little quizzes all the time.
Yeah.
And it was just hilarious. So you could be trucking along and then you mess up. So he was basically rewarding you with a fun badge for a moment of oops.
Right. No, that's funny. But I could see people wanting to get the badge. And so like just yeah. getting it on purpose.
Yeah.
No, but like I get what you say about badging everything because Tatum earns a picking up steam badge like every time she gets into Khan Academy. So it's not, you know, cool to her anymore.
Right. Not a big deal.
Yeah. I went with Laura Pena because I wanted to remind myself to tell her about the badge chat. It's Badge Chat K12 is the hashtag. And I think that they meet on Tuesday nights and it's super fun. But Laura said, okay, I learned about these at a conference this summer and I'm super excited to use them this year. I love the idea of making learning pathways clear to students and that there is no direct pathway, you know, to get to everything. So I liked her tweet.
There's some digital options too. If you just want to do a badging in your classroom, there's digital options available for you as a teacher to build in your learning and freemium style. So
freemium.
But with Classcraft and Resly, which we mentioned in the interview, you'll have to go back and listen to get more details. Those are fairly priced packages that can help you with gamification in your classroom too. They're not
okay.
Like I would pay those out of my own pocket. I mean, it's within that realm of possible.
Sure, sure.
You know, it's not like $1,000 for 100 kids or whatever, or at least right. It wasn't when I did it. So I went with Kimberly Blodgett here. She said, if we're going to use badges in parentheses rewards, it's important to find a reason to award every student a badge. I'm sorry, yell at me if you will, but some students could go all year and not be recognized for anything in your reward system. I challenge you to reevaluate. And she brings up an excellent point here because that's the beauty of the badging system in your classroom. You can structure it in such a way that every student should be able to earn one at some point in time through the school.
At least one.
Yeah, it doesn't just have to be most books read. It doesn't have to be most 90% or better on a spelling test. It doesn't have to be most whatevers. I mean, it could be picks up the most trash badge, or it could be helps out the most classmates badge. I mean, there's just different things that you can do all year long, so that every student has an opportunity to earn the thing that they're good at. Like
exactly.
If I'm in a class with a Jedi and we get the highest test score badge, I have no shot at that. And I know that when I go in, because the Jedi sits next to me and he always gets 102 on a 100-point test.
Yeah.
And the best I can maybe do is a 93. Fun. Yeah, it's not
fun. Or an 86. Right. Or, yeah.
But there's other badges that we can structure inside of our classroom that can show up on a regular basis that are available for even students that are difficult to teach or have a difficult time learning. We can still honor them with a badge.
Okay. Question 9. Epic wins are awesome events. How can your student achieve epic wins worthy of celebration? And so this, your epic event, epic win, I saw that picture in the McGonagall TED Talk, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. And so it was pretty
hashtag
exciting.
Easter egg.
Yeah. Okay. Sorry.
But that's all they know.
That's all they know. So it was really exciting. She's like, so some of you will just see this as this, and some of you gamers will see this as like, oh, this is a precipice moment. And so I really liked that TED Talk. Anyway, so that's an epic win. Like it took a lot. Beating a boss, right? Mm-hmm. Or, you know, something like that. Is that what an epic win is?
Or however you want to define it in your classroom. We're going to have
okay.
them.
Okay.
And it's not just something that occurs at the end of the semester. The epic win could be dominating that test, beating that boss, or it could be something else.
Yeah, no, totally. So I liked what Brian Hayes said here, and he's Buck, at BHayes72 on the Twitters, if you're not following him. He says, it honestly depends on the win, in my opinion, but when our bandies won sweepstakes, they had the opportunity to get sweepstakes rings. If the student had a great performance, I would buy a pizza. Of course, I'm open to everything in between. But like, so how will you reward that? How do they get that? It just ideas. I like this because I wasn't thinking about band as something that could be gamified, but like they are still winning things. And you know, even thinking now about Megan Lloyd's
choir
performances, like, all right, what's a superior worth? What, you know, is anyway, all of these different ways of thinking of how to gamify, and it can be done across. I mean, you've got band teachers here answering how they might be able to do that. And I just really liked that.
Brian had several great ideas revolving, and I wanted to pick him on almost every on everyone, but I thought I can't do that. I'm going to pick the one that I like best. But he had a lot of great ideas that are centered on band. I went with John Stewart, who is at JStu511. He said, anytime the students can bring new knowledge to the class, that deserves a celebration. Understanding what the teacher says is great, but going out and bringing new stuff back, leading is awesome.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, and epic wins. I mean, I don't know. When I think of epic win, I think of some of those like classic Tiger Woods winning the U.S. Open, you know, where it's like the fist pump and the roar of excitement and
yes.
and all of that. Or, I mean, Ron was playing FIFA with his cousin at Christmas this year. And when the game ended, somebody had an epic win. Because either Jaden or Rowan was doing a victory dance around the room.
That's hilarious.
I mean, it was a big deal. I mean, and it was a primal roar of victory for one of those boys. And so, yeah. So
what do you think? So Michael Jordan's epic split jump.
Yeah. The slam dunk, you know, with authority. Epic win. Yeah. So, I don't know. So it's just, you get to define those in your classroom. And epic wins, maybe when that one kid that doesn't get it does. That's an epic win we're going to celebrate somehow.
Yeah, I like that idea.
All right.
All right, we're secret question time.
Yeah, there were two of them.
Okay.
You take the first one, I'll do the second.
Okay. Easter eggs are hidden goodies that are scattered all through a video game. How can you incorporate Easter eggs in your school next year? I didn't even know how to search for the answers on this one.
So Aaron and I, neither one of us picked a tweet because I don't think in the chat either there was something that came up there.
Okay.
But that Easter egg is, those are the hidden fun things that you can find, and they're fun. And once you find them, you're like, oh, you know, my life is more complete.
How did you post Secret Question?
So what I did with Secret Question was I just tweeted it from my regular Teach From Here account, but I didn't hashtag it Okla Ed, but I put in there secret question one and I put in there secret question two.
So if people were following you, they've got it.
So if people were following me, they saw it. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So how would you be able to incorporate some hidden goodies or Easter eggs into your classroom?
So
how did you do it?
I didn't add this one to my classroom. So this is one that I'm chewing on currently. Like, how can I add this into my teaching coming up in the fall? One of the things that I'm considering, so if any of my future students are listening, but we use a learning management system. We use Moodle for our learning management system. Sure. So I'm thinking about adding something in there where if you're just scrolling through, you just pass right over it. But if you click on the link, there's something in there that's beneficial to you for class purposes. But if you don't click on the link, you're not necessarily missing out on the learning that is intentionally taking place. Okay. So I think that's how I'm going to approach it this fall. So, but also inside your class, maybe, like with our elementary school teachers, there's such an emphasis on, decorating your class with a specific theme.
Bulletin boards.
Bulletin boards and all that kind of stuff and monsters and or dinosaurs and ladybugs or flowers or pots or Dr. Seuss or whatever. So maybe in the midst of all that busyness, you got two or three things posted up, just maybe a little bit out of the theme.
Okay.
Enough that a student might ask a question about it. And maybe when the student notices that thing sticking out, they ask the question and that leads to the Easter egg.
Okay. That's fun.
Yeah.
All right. Well, what was the second question?
Second question was, instant feedback is important in all kinds of games. And it doesn't matter if it's a card game, board game, video game, golf, tennis, basketball, whatever. How can you work towards instant feedback in your school? For example, if you're playing Texas Hold'em poker.
Okay.
And you make a bet. There's instant feedback on your bet by the other players. They either match that bet or they fold.
Sure.
Instant feedback. Or if I'm playing golf, when I hit that little white ball, I get instant feedback on my swing because the ball goes to the left or it goes right or it goes straight. Okay?
Okay.
If I'm playing Monopoly, I get instant feedback because the second I roll those dice, it tells me exactly what to do. And if I land on the space that says go to jail, I go to jail. Instant feedback.
Yeah. Okay.
If you're playing a video game, every time you touch a joystick to move your character, you get instant feedback. All right? So how can you utilize instant feedback in your school?
All right. Well, I will be honest. This was something I tried to do a lot last year because of the PBL work that we were doing. And so feedback is very necessary to get those projects to kind of mold and go the way you're hoping for success, right? And so I was giving feedback a lot, but it felt like it was a pretty fine line for me between regular instant feedback and nitpicking.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have to watch myself because I see the end project in my brain, and if it's not going that way, like how can I get it that way? And I don't want to nitpick somebody. So how would you help me figure out that fine line, or is there a difference?
I don't know. I think that's just something that's going to come down to the relationship you have with your students.
Okay.
But the fact that you're there providing guidance as the teacher, as quickly as possible, that's part of it. So whether you get to nitpick or not, that'll be probably more of an internal, like, ugh, I'm telling him too much. But I think of it in this way too. Like with my students, when they would turn homework in, I would get their homework and I would try and give it back to them as quickly as possible, which can be a challenge, right?
Because
you got a lot of students. But what ended up happening was since I wasn't lecturing all the time anymore, I would get quizzes from students, but I didn't get 80 quizzes at once. I got 5 or 4 or 8. And so I pause what I'm doing in the classroom. I can grade those 8 quizzes really quickly. And I can give them right back to the kids. I graded 4 tests at a time, or 2 tests at a time, or just 1 test. I hardly ever graded all 60 tests all at one time. And so there's ways to work around that through your classroom management.
Okay.
So as your students are doing, maybe on their project-based learning, maybe there's, these are the key pieces that we have to hit. So as they're working through their project, they hit this piece, and as they come up against those pieces, they bring them to you for feedback on that before they can go to the next piece.
Okay.
And maybe that's a place that you can provide that instant feedback for them.
Good.
So there you go, gamification.
Well, you had a boom sauce.
I did. It was Josh Flores, and he said, this is in response to question 9, which was, epic wins are awesome events. How can your students achieve epic wins? He said, be every student's old whoa man in a cave and empower them to, 1, recognize their weakness, and 2, guide them during the struggle. Once they trust you, take your feedback to heart and collect the dungeon keys. They will need you to celebrate with them.
Oh my word. And that really was such a good tweet.
It was a good one. And he had in there a picture of Zelda, of course. So, but there you go. And I thought it was a really good one because we need to mentor our students. And then when they do something great, we need to celebrate with them.
I agree. So this was such a good chat.
Yeah.
Good job.
A long podcast, I think. I'm afraid of the time. Coming up though, later this week.
Courageous leadership.
Yep.
We've got some pretty amazing leaders in Okla Ed and across, I mean, that tune in to this Twitter chat each week as well.
Right.
So I'm excited to see what people have to say.
And it's going to be led by Jason James, who is at James409Jason. And he's done, usually when he hosts a chat, he does it over some sort of leadership. So I'm excited to see where this one takes us.
Yes. And so if you haven't joined into an Okla Ed Twitter chat, they happen on Sunday nights at 8 p.m.
Central Standard Time.
Thank you.
In the United States. All right, educators, you know what to do.
Saying you're doing fine, Oklahoma, Oklahoma, Oklahoma.